This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Glynis Board. This morning, we'll hear from a nurse who's taking care of COVID-19 patients.
Well, I think the longest patient we had on our floor was like 55 days, and he didn't see anything outside of his room. So staring at four walls and a window for 55 days, pretty terrible.
This is West Virginia Morning. We hear a lot about the effects of coronavirus on the economy and patients who come down with COVID-19, but Eric Douglas spoke with a charge nurse at Ruby Memorial Hospital in Morgantown, West Virginia, about what it's like to treat these patients.
My name is Colton Markle, and I'm a registered nurse here at Ruby Memorial Hospital.
Describe for me what the care that you have to provide for a COVID patient.
We come in the morning, get our assignment. Normally pre-COVID, we would go in kind of like introduce ourselves to the patient, say like do kind of like a shift change. However, now that we're in COVID, we kind of do that outside the room. We stand at the window and talk about the patient. This is what this patient has. This is what's going on. We're going in, introduce ourselves. We have to wear a capper, a gown, double glove, booties, and a mask. We're also assess on where they're at in terms of their sickness. So instance patient comes in and they develop symptoms 3 days ago and they're clinically getting worse. And we say, okay, let's see if we can give them some convalescent plasma or if they're ready for remdesivir and stuff like that. It just all kind of depends on where they are symptom-wise and where they are clinically. And then that's kind of where we base all that off of.
What are your thoughts when you see the big parties and that kind of stuff and people refusing to wear masks? How does that strike you?
Yeah, so when I look at that, I think that I think of it, I can look at it in both ways. I can see it as a healthcare worker and seeing that we are seeing people in here every day that are extremely sick, having to be intubated. We see this every day. And people that are going out not really caring about wearing a mask. I personally wear a mask. I think we should wear masks, but I'm not going to judge them and say that they should wear a mask. I say it's my, I'm wearing masks because it's protecting me. But if they don't want to wear the mask, then that's their choice.
I'm sure you've lost a few patients with COVID. And we've heard all the stories about families not being able to come and be with their loved ones, that sort of thing. What's that like for you guys? How much of a burden is that on you?
I'd say probably the hardest thing. That's probably something we see more than people realize, I think. I mean, we've had a mother, a son, a mother, father, son, mother, father, two sons, a husband and wife. I mean, I can think of four or five families off the top of my head, and that's just in family wise. But it's, I think the saddest part is to see that one of these patients gets critically ill. One of them has to go down to the ICU and the other ones isn't taking the virus as hard. It's not hitting them as hard. And they can't see each other. They can't really communicate with each other. So some patients can be in the hospital for 50 days. I think the longest patient we had on our floor was like 55 days and he didn't see anything outside of his room. So staring at four walls and a window for 55 days, I mean, it's pretty terrible. I think the saddest thing is we had a patient in here, his wife passed away from COVID and his son passed away from COVID. Couldn't go see either of their funerals. So we did FaceTime for him to watch both of his son and his wife be buried. When you tell people about it, they obviously know it happens, but until like you kind of live it, kind of see it, it really hits home. It's definitely real. And I wish everybody could see it for one day. And I feel like a lot of people's ideas of this thing and people's views of it would change.
Is there anything that you want me to know or the listeners to know?
There probably will be another time where we can get back to hopefully reality. But I think that what we've done as a country, as a state, in terms of following these guidelines, whether it you agree or disagree. I think it's helped maintain a bridge where our hospital systems aren't getting overwhelmed. So even just the general public knowing that following these guidelines, wearing your masks has helped the hospital tremendously. So we as frontliners would like to thank the people who have been abiding by these rules.
That was Colton Markle talking about treating coronavirus patients and what he wants the rest of us to know. That was an Appalachia Health News story, a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting made possible with support from Marshall Health and the Charleston Area Medical Center. On the latest episode of Inside Appalachia, we listen back on a conversation with author Jeanette Walls. Walls grew up poor in America. She wrote about it in her best-selling memoir, The Glass Castle. She spent most of her childhood out west, but her father, originally from West Virginia, eventually brought her family back to McDowell County, where she lived for 4 years. Eventually, Jeanette moved to New York in search of what she thought would be a better life. She found success and even an apartment on Park Avenue, all while her parents ended up living on the streets. A movie was released in 2017. Inside Appalachia host Jessica Lilly spoke with Walls just before the movie was released in theaters about why she wrote the book.
You know, I tried a number of times when I was younger. In my 20s, I'd write a couple hundred pages and throw it away, and then a couple hundred pages when I was in my 30s. And I tried to fictionalize it one time. I didn't know if I was supposed to make it stranger or less strange. Like, what was I supposed to change? And then one day, I used to write about celebrities for a living, and I was in a taxi in New York City, and I saw a homeless woman rooting through the garbage, and I got a good look at her, and I realized it was my mother. And I got together with her a couple of days later, and I said, "Ma, what the heck am I supposed to tell people when they ask me about you?" And she said, "Tell them the truth." And that was sort of the kick in the behind I needed to confront this past of mine that I had for so long tried to escape and tried to pretend didn't exist. I was completely convinced that if people knew the truth about me, that I'd get fired. I did not think that my book would resonate, that it would sell well. That is not why I told my story. I told it because I couldn't not tell it any longer. I was just tired of being ashamed of who and what I was. I've come to believe that very often these things about ourselves that we dislike so much are the best thing we have going for us. And for me, it certainly was. This past that I'd tried to cut myself off from, it was the better part of me. And that's why I become such a big fan of storytelling. I think that if you can go back and revisit the sometimes painful memories, but also sometimes beautiful. The thing is, if you cut yourself off from the pain, you cut yourself off from the beauty as well.
I want to talk a little bit about McDowell County in southern West Virginia. Mm-hmm. It seemed like the writing and how you described Phoenix and places out west before you moved to West Virginia had more of a positive vibe to it. And when you get to McDowell County, there's a certain mm-hmm. darkness to mm-hmm. the language.
Yeah.
But in both places, you grew up in poverty.
Yeah.
Why was it different in McDowell?
I think it's, first of all, I think it's easier to be poor in a warm place, you know, especially if your parents don't provide heat in your housing. So, I mean, it was cold. It was cold in West Virginia. I mean, when we lived in McDowell County, coal was cheap at the time. We could have bought a ton for $35 to $50, and they just didn't buy it. It was cold, and I was hungry all the time. I mean, the school in Phoenix, it provided free lunches in a way that wasn't embarrassing. They made a big deal at the school I went to. If the lunch tickets were a different color if you got a free lunch, and Mom wouldn't let us do it. So I was cold and I was hungry. It was not McDowell County's fault. It was not West Virginia's fault. But our circumstances got very, very grim there. And I think that one of the things that also happened is that my father was born in McDowell County, in Welch. And I think that returning home for him was a bit of a defeat, and he sank very deep into alcoholism because he went back with his mother and father, who were also alcoholics, and his brother, and he just got sucked back into this really destructive lifestyle. And we stopped moving around. It was always whenever times got tough, we just would stay there in one location for a short time, and then we'd move again and start afresh. Dad called it doing the skedaddle. And we just stopped moving. It was like my father had confronted his demon, and the demons kind of won. This book is in no way meant to in any way disparage West Virginia or McDowell County or Welch, which is filled with lovely, kind, generous people. But our circumstances were very, very difficult. I think that one of the reasons that this book has resonated and has been on the bestseller list for some ridiculous amount of time, like 7 years, is because poverty and hardships and addiction, it exists everywhere. My story is not unique. Some people say, well, you know, it's extreme. And you'd be surprised by some of the stories that I hear, and sometimes in very affluent areas. You know, people go to great lengths to hide their poverty, and I did.
And you described your dad in the book as an alcoholic. And,
yeah.
But
yeah.
At the same time, you also paint him in a hero's light, as very innovative and smart.
My father was a magnificent man. I adore him, and to this day I miss him. He died in 1994. He was both the best and the worst of fatherhood, you know, but anybody who's dealt with an addict knows how they break your heart. He couldn't fight his demons, but he gave us the tools to do that as children. And, you know, he just always told us that we deserved something better, that we were strong, that we were resilient. All of this traveling around, all of this chaos, he always said that was temporary, that one of these days he was going to build us a great big mansion, and he called it the Glass Castle. And when times would get tough, he'd pull out the blueprints for the Glass Castle. It was about hope and belief in yourself and belief in the future, and I believe that if a child gets that, along with a love of education and a sense of self-esteem, that you can make it through just about anything, and that's why I'm not angry with him or anybody. I mean, I certainly bear no ill will towards my family or anyone I grew up with in West Virginia. You know, there's some tough stories there, and there still are. They're good people just trying to make it out. And one of the reasons I love having written this book is that so many people come up to me and they say, the details of our lives are very different, but you and I could be sisters. You know, and sometimes they were raised in fancy areas in Boston, but their father's a pill addict or something. And that's why we tell our stories. I'm not looking for sympathy, not looking to tell horror stories, but to make emotional connections with people who we might think there is no connection with.
And perhaps provide a window into this world and different realities. I mean, I know you mentioned that people can relate to it, but it's also realities that not a whole lot of folks talk about. But
exactly.
showing that you can have those realities and you can still succeed and wearing it and being proud of it.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point to make. It's like, I think that some people look at, you know, poor folk and just think, oh, and put, you know, well, why do they live that white trash, black trash, whatever, you know, why don't they take care of themselves? And one of the reasons that I love this movie so much is it goes beyond the stereotypes and shows that people who, from a distance, you might be able to just be able to put a label on them and say, we know their type. But behind what we see, there's always a story. And things are much more complicated than you think. And they might look like people in desperate poverty, but there are hopes and dreams and love there as well. And that's something I hope people don't forget. And everything in life is both a blessing and a curse. It's entirely up to us which one we choose to focus on. You know, my father had very dark things about him, but he also had incredible moments of light. And do I want to sit around feeling sorry for myself and focus on the darkness and focus on the alcoholism? Or do I want to focus on the gifts he gave me, the love of learning, the sense of self-esteem, the blueprints for the Glass Castle, you know, which was a hope and a dream for the future?
You can hear the rest of this story on the latest Inside Appalachia podcast. Subscribe at wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Andrea Billups is our news director. I'm your host and producer, Glennis Board. This is West Virginia Morning.